Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I will turn the hosting duties over to Eli Ritter, who will talk to Abby Dubé, a recent graduate of Humber's film and TV program, and a Guelphite who went to public school here at Rixon Ridge. I mention this because that's where Abby got involved as a volunteer with WE Charities. Like hundreds of thousands of young people across Canada, Abby was encouraged to get involved with WE and volunteer to support international development projects in places like Kenya and India, which she did. And it was during these trips that even young Abby started to notice some issues with the way WE runs things at the local level and in places where they are supposed to be changing things for the better. WE, a personal story, is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. WE has turned into something of a national scandal. It's put the federal government on the defensive, it's created threats of a fall election, and has just this week cost Bill Morneau his seat and his position as finance minister. The truth is that there have been a lot of questions raised about the way WE has done business, from Canada Land's reporting about the seemingly improper connections between WE the charity and Me to WE the for-profit endeavor, to more recent reports in Post Media about the WE charity's extensive real estate holdings. The little nonprofit that could, fighting child labor and promoting sustainability around the world, is now fighting for its life, and it has cast a harsh new spotlight on the whole Canadian nonprofit industry, if some of the people in the charity business are to be believed. That's the big picture. We also need to talk about the little picture, and that's where Abby Dubé comes in. While at Rixon, Abby volunteered for two WE trips, one to Kenya and one to India. These experiences were eye-opening in more ways than one, because while she volunteered abroad, Abby did not see a charity that was leading by its best, most idealistic aspirations. In the wake of the new level of scrutiny brought to WE Charities, its affiliates, and partners, Abby reached out to Guelph Politico contributor Eli Ritter to tell her story, and we all agreed that putting her voice to the record in the form of a podcast was the best way to do that. So this week on the Guelph Politicast, Eli Ritter will take Abby Dubé through her WE experiences, from helping to build schools in Kenya, where it seems like not all children there were treated equally, and then to India, where a hotel used by WE charities to house volunteers seemed to itself use child labor, which is supposed to be one of the issues they're fighting against. Abby will also talk about how her opinion about the work of WE changed because of those volunteer trips, how she tried to bring her issues to the attention of the people running those programs, and how she believes that her concerns were never really addressed. Also, Abby will discuss why she's wanted to talk about her concerns about WE on the Guelph Politicast, and how she's concerned that some issues with WE are getting lost amongst the louder political scandal. So Eli Ritter will take over now as he caught up with Abby Dubé a couple of weeks ago via Zoom.
All right. Thank you, Abby, for joining us today. Thanks for joining in. So we'll get started right off the bat, just with a few details about yourself, just so that the viewers can get a sense. And so how long have you been in Guelph for? I guess you're a longtime Guelphite. And we'll start with that.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Guelph. Basically, lived here my whole life. And I went to live in Toronto for, 4 or 5 years for school to complete my diploma. And then, I moved back now with COVID and all of that fun stuff. So I definitely say it's kind of one of those things that, like, once you're born here, it's kind of in your blood.
Right. Coming. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of our Guelph listeners will relate to that 100%.
Yeah.
So let's move to why we're here, the WE charity and everything that's mm-hmm. going on there, and your experience. And to sort of get started with your story with them, can you explain how you maybe first got involved, what inspired you to join up with them and to volunteer, and start there?
Sure. I feel like a lot of other kids across the country would have a similar story. You know, it was my middle school teachers that really got us involved. especially like grade eight. That was a huge moment for us. And I just remember it really revolved around like globalization and education on like philanthropy and humanitarian work. And yeah, there was so much like on MeToWe specifically and Free the Children, and how like they just started this amazing movement when they were like 12 and 13 years old, and they went like internationally to build all these schools and to fight child labor essentially. And like every kid that I knew wanted to go to WE Day and learn more about them and learn like, you know, how can I do that? How can I be like this amazing change maker? So yeah, I was really like pretty much every year into high school, even they were kind of integrating that with school or with like certain courses. Yeah, it's kind of, they got you young.
Yeah, that's where it got started, and you're inspired by them. And so at some point you went on your first trip with them.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where you kind of ran into some things that made you question.
Yeah.
So maybe you can describe sort of that first trip and how you got there.
Yeah. So I was 13 when I went on my first trip to Kenya. And would have been August 2011. And I think I just really wanted to travel. I was really interested in like actually being able to go overseas and do something positive, and like be able to interact with people that you're helping seemed really cool. So yeah, I decided to do that, and you know, it seemed really amazing at first. All of their promotional marketing tools were like just mind blowing and like totally would hype you up. But when I got there, it was like, I was a little surprised at like where we were staying, because it was kind of like in an outback area. You're like thrown into this camping situation. No plumbing, no running water. They kind of guilted you into like eating less and showering as little as possible. And they told you that you were using the same water as the community, so it was a shared source. And even though you're building like all day, every day, it was kind of like you want to shower as little as possible because that's taking other people's clean water away from them, which I found a little weird, because it's like, if you're going to have volunteers go over, why not have like separate drinking sources or showering sources for everyone? And when we went over there, there were a few things that kind of weirded me out. There's, I don't know what she had. I'm not like a professional, but she had some sort of special needs. And she lived right on the school site. And I remember, like, I wrote pages and pages about her in my journal. Her name's Gracie Ann. And she had like no source of education. There was no like EA there for her. There was no like kind of friend group or support group for her. But she would always wander onto the school site where we were building, and she would clearly like want to interact with us. She'd like hang around us. And she'd have a tough time understanding why we couldn't play with her all the time. And it was kind of heartbreaking to see that, like, okay, all these other kids like get to go to school, they get to go home and live these normal lives. But then, like, what is she doing, you know? And we weren't the first trip to go there. We weren't the last trip to go there. And her life kind of just stayed the same. And it kind of weirded me out that, like, why are some kids allowed to go and get an education where she isn't? Or why are they putting some money towards other kids, but they're not, like, they're kind of ignoring her? And yeah, her even when I went back to Kenya, you know, her situation didn't progress. It was kind of, again, the same. And another situation, they built an all-girl school, Kisaruni, and they had, I think, 76 applicants, and they only accepted 41. And just like everything coming out now about all these expenses, about how much money that they were willing to pay certain people to like take trips or for their expenses for doing different projects. They would always tell us like, you know, we don't have the financial resources to do quantity schooling, to do quantity projects. We're only doing quality things. So we have to turn people away. We have to make sure that, you know, these kids get kind of a quality education, and then they can go and educate others after that. But seeing all of that stuff come out now, it just makes me wonder, like, what does quality really mean? And was that okay to be turning away? That's like 30 girls that you could have changed their lives. That's a hard decision to make. So,
right.
Yeah.
And one of the situations you described was you were on a trip and there was a hotel that you stayed at, and mm-hmm. there were child laborers there, or people that you thought may have been that. Is there maybe kind of more you can explain on that?
Yeah. So that was our trip to India. That was a sponsored trip as well. So RIM sponsored, it was like a Build a Village award. And I think they sponsored, there's like 20 people to go to Kenya and 20 people to go to India. And so in the India trip, we went to a hotel and it was called Arenuas. It was in Udaipur. And I don't know. I guess they had a child laborer there. We didn't know much about him or his story. I just remember seeing him when we were having dinner, and we all had that like that weird moment of, you know, we're building this school, we're on this trip to negate that, but we're staying in a place that is like giving money to support child labor. Is there even a point to us being here? And our facilitators, again, when we talked to them about it, they just kind of reasoned it off as like, oh, that's, you know, India for you. That's really common. You're going to see that a lot here. There's nothing we can do though. It's a really dangerous situation for you to get involved. So just don't do anything about it. And we kind of swept it under the rug. But then I got sick from probably food poisoning, and they ended up coming to my room and they sent the boy to help clean it up. I just remember feeling like so guilty, and I wrote in my journal that like, if I had known that they were going to send this boy to do all this stuff, I would have cleaned it up myself. Like or would have gone sick, you know, would have tried to do something to negate that. But I think looking back at it now, what bothers me is that instead of addressing it or saying like, okay, you know, we're gonna reach out to Craig and Mark, or we're gonna reach out to headquarters, we're gonna try and figure out a solution, we're gonna try and see like maybe we can set up a fund for his education, or we can buy them out, or just do something, it was put aside. And to this day, I have no idea what happened to him. I just know that they kept sending people back to that same hotel after we went, because I'm friends with the staff that were working at the hotel. And they sent me pictures that they were tagged in of MeetWe trips, and the dates are like 2014, 2017. We went in 2012, and they knew about that problem in 2012. So it just makes me wonder, like, why is that little boy allowed to be like working in a laborer, but like Iqbal, who the whole, I guess Free the Children movement started on, arguably, was like so different. Like, what was that difference there? And, you know, talking about it with my trip mates and trying to figure it out, it doesn't make sense at the end of the day. So.
And you said you did a lot of follow-up with WE, and to see, you know, after the trip, is there something that we can do? And you said that didn't really go anywhere?
I mean, after the trip, there wasn't any follow-up at all with him. And being 14, at the time, being naive, you kind of wanted to believe that they're going to handle it. And I kind of just left it at that, trusted that there's going to be some outcome or some positive reassurance that, you know, he'd have a better life. However, after that point, I don't think I ever raised it up again. And I spent, you know, 10 years with them and was going to consider working with them. So, yeah. I think it's disappointing to not have any contact back or any, I guess, a progress report.
And just for context for people listening, can you explain sort of what a sponsored trip is, or just that terminology?
Mm-hmm. RIM, they partnered with MeetAWE and they covered all the cost of the MeetAWE trip, which is, I think, for India around $5,000, and Kenya was $5,000 as well. It was quite a good deal of money. And they gave you it's like a playbook, a BlackBerry playbook, and like a certificate and all that kind of thing. So it was, I remember, a big promotional thing where you had to apply and you could submit like a creative video or an essay describing kind of what struggle you had and why you kind of deserved to go on a trip. And like I mentioned, there's 20 for Kenya and 20 to India. And we went on the India trip that year.
And just for people listening, RIM is now BlackBerry. BlackBerry was RIM back in the day.
Yes.
You mentioned that later on they were reaching out for a kind of an opportunity for you to do training where you would pay for, you know, going for a week just to get this training. Maybe you can detail some of that and your experience with WE on that.
Yeah. For a long time I was considering doing facilitator training, or I think they call it advanced facilitator training now. It's or some fancy leadership thing. It's between like $2,900 and $3,000 to go, and it's specifically like you have to go to Arizona for that. I think it's like a week-long trip, and you have to pay like that $3,000 in order to get like a certificate to be eligible to be a facilitator. And I was considering it for a long time because that's like a necessity for you to be able to travel and go overseas and facilitate trips and like get paid to do that. However, it bothered me that you'd spend all that money up front on this training, but then there's no guarantee of a job afterwards. There's no guarantee that there would be any positions open even. So it just seemed like a big down payment up front with no return or no guarantee. So I was kind of hesitant to do that, and I never ended up following through with the training. But it did seem a little weird. Like, why specifically do you have to go to Arizona for that? Why do you have to spend that much money? Then again, you're not really going to recoup the cost that much, especially with a seasonal job like that, or like a contract position. So it just didn't really add up to me.
And sort of with all the experiences you've had with WE and then the companies that it was under previously, other different brandings it's had, why do you feel like now is a good time for you to sort of speak out about all your experiences and things that have happened with them?
Well, I think before I was 13, 14, when I joined the organization, and with everything coming out now, I feel like the conversation is, there are things being left out of it. And the inconsistencies that I felt as a kid, as a teenager, I feel like they were never addressed and they should be addressed. You know, they were telling us very specific things and very specific reasons that they could and couldn't do projects, or they could and couldn't help certain people, and why they were allocating funds to specific kids or whatever. So I think they owe it to volunteers, to people who've gone on trips, to justify that, especially with all these expenses coming out and the hundreds of thousands of dollars, that it, right, fiscally, it doesn't make sense to what they were telling us. You know, if they can pay certain members and political parties hundreds of thousands of dollars to go on trips, for example, then why couldn't they set up a fund for Gracie Ann? Or why couldn't they help that child labor? Or why couldn't they accept more girls in Kisaroo? Like, I think there are just so many unanswered questions that I personally feel like I'd like answers to. And I hope I'm not alone in that. It's not like an attack, but there's a lot of inconsistencies that it just doesn't make sense anymore. And I feel like this, what happened, you know, with the student grant was kind of an inciting incident, but I don't think it was an isolated incident. I think, you know, over the years it's been building to that. And in my experience, it kind of was like, hold on a second, you know, I don't think this is like the only moment that there were concerns for people, at least for me. So, yeah.
Right. And going from here, what would you like to see, you know, if you could talk to the people at the top of WE, what would you want to see happen to the organization going forward? What would you like to see change?
I think it's a bit beyond restructuring. I'd like to see like at least a little bit more atonement coming out and more transparency, because at least the vibes that I'm getting from watching the news and all of the reporting on it, they seem to be really defensive, and to be really on the back foot instead of just wanting to be upfront with everyone. And if you don't have things to hide, and you know you're doing good work, just show the documents, just share like all the good work that you're doing. People will see through that and they'll see the genuine side of that. But you know, all these things coming out about NDAs and having to hide different things and just the expenses and this different shell companies, just everything coming out slowly, I think is making it worse. And people have a right to know when you're a charity, when you say you're doing things the proper way, they have a right to hold you to a higher standard, and to know that their dollar is being well spent. So I don't think it's like an attack. It's just people, they want more information. And if you do genuinely do good work, just share that. Be more upfront.
Would you say that you're still passionate about the original goals of WE and international development in general? Does this experience make you cynical towards those goals, or is it just sort of, you know, just WE?
Right. I'm on the fence about philanthropy in general. Even just comparing my first trip to Kenya to my last trip to Kenya, And there were, the differences were mainly like, we had several high profile people on my last trip to Kenya. We had a lot of FaceTime with Craig and Mark, and our kind of conditions and how we were treated were so different. And I think it just makes me question of like, is it actually like to help and to volunteer, or is it to make, you know, certain people, let's say rich people, feel good about themselves for, you know, a year and to make their image look better? And for example, like those people who got left out, those specific kids, that's a lot of power for one organization, one person to have. I don't know if that's necessarily for me, makes me feel comfortable. And there's a whole question also around, you know, I was 13 when I went over there, and using child labor, free child labor, to fund and do or help negate other child labor is like a weird cycle, a weird ideology around it. So it's just these very strange ways of going about things that I'm not sure, you know, in 2020 makes sense anymore. And again, also the idea of white saviorism, you know, is it appropriate to say we have the be all end all philosophies of charities, we know better than the people, even within Kenya, within these countries, and we're going to take over. We're going to, you know, be the saviors here. It does make you question, you know, that kind of, I want to say Mother Teresa-ness, but, you know, that is anyone really capable of solving all the world's problems? And would Kenyans be better just if we, you know, put capital towards their business ventures or like invested in them instead of doing like charity work? So, yeah, I think in general, there's a lot of good questions being asked, not just we specifically. But they are a huge name, obviously, internationally. So, yeah.
Okay. And what about the people that think the scandal is just sort of a negative attack on we? Like people who are just saying, oh, it has no merit, whatever. It's just sort of a negative attack on their organization.
In my opinion, again, nobody forced them to pick up the phone. They're big boys in their 40s. They kind of did it to themselves, like the Liberal Party. No one forced them to start incurring expenses to start working on this program. So sure, it might have been a great program, you know, theoretically, but looking at it now, it's highly problematic how they went about it. And I think for sure, you know, they do good work for some people. However, they are leaving some people out, some kids out. So does that negate all the negative things that they're doing? And does that justify choosing who gets certain resources over certain kids? Does that justify, you know, lobbying the government? It's kind of that weird, I guess, chicken and egg thing of like, does one good thing make you a totally decent, holy person? I don't know about that. And there's a lot of questions around and confusion, you know, between MeetWe, you know, which is a for-profit private entity, you know, 50% of that goes back to the business. And they said in their testimony, they get their salaries from MeetWe. So they don't have to release those statements because they are a private company. You know, that's just fact. That's law. That's, they're treated differently than an NGO. And the NGO, we do see those numbers. But again, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors, I feel like, happening because private firms are treated differently. And, you know, you don't have to disclose certain things. So it does raise some red flags. And I don't think it's concerns. It's not attack. When you're an NGO, you have to remember people want to know that you're actually doing what you say you're doing, that you're doing good work. And I don't think that's a bad thing to hold people accountable for that.
And sort of a final question for you. Do you, with all the experiences you've had with WE, and the trips you've been on, the people you've met, do you regret any of going with WE on these trips and being involved in the organization in the end?
It's definitely something like I've been processing this whole past month of just after everything's been hitting the fan of who are these people really? And did I actually do anything meaningful? Looking back at it, we had a lot of conversations with contractors where they told us to redo everything, you know, 2 weeks worth of work because we were digging in the wrong spots, or we were being told by facilitators to do the wrong thing. And it just makes me question, like, that was $5,000 worth of money to technically build a school. And then all of our progress was pretty much negated. And it makes me wonder, like, was it a positive impact? I mean, the kids there, seeing them and the culture was an amazing part for sure. You can never take that away. And the relationships that you build for sure, that's always going to be positive. However, the altruism of it and making a difference is a little questionable. So I guess 50-50, I think I would prefer the scope of the projects or how they kind of market them to be changed a little bit. Because it was different from, you know, the WE days that they presented the marketing that I saw, and the realities that you saw were hugely different. But yeah, at the end of the day, the culture and the experience is second to none. And yeah, I wouldn't trade that. You know, it definitely made me grow as a person and see things that I normally wouldn't have seen. So it's kind of like 50-50, I think.
Well, Abby, thank you for coming on and sort of sharing your experience and the stories that you shared with your experience with WE.
And once again, that was Abby Dubay being interviewed by Eli Ritter. There is a companion piece to this podcast, which includes Abby's trip diary entries and a response from the WE charities, and you can find all that, of course, on GuelphPolitico.ca. And that is it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The Guelph Politicast is usually recorded at CFRU at the University Center on the University of Guelph campus, and to learn more about CFRU, go to CFRU.ca. You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can download it from the host Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. And when you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you will get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can also find Guelph Politico on Facebook at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate, where there have been a lot of recent signups from people taking the dive and helping to support Guelph Politico. And that is, of course, very much appreciated. For all the latest local political news, check out GuelphPolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, see you next time.